We're very happy today to have Barbara Slate with us, comic book writer and artist, a graphic novel author and artist. I guess you say both every time. And we're going to talk today about a couple of different things. She has a book, You Can Do a Graphic Novel, which talks about the process of doing graphic novels. And then she also has her new book, Getting Married and Other Mistakes, which is her graphic novel that she wrote. And we'll be talking about both books.
Autobiographical.
We'll be talking about both books, and we'll be talking about the process of graphic novels, and then we will give all of you in the audience a chance to ask questions, and then we will sell books, and Barbara will be happy to sign books for you. So this is a very basic question, I think. Graphic novel versus comic book. I'm sure you've never been asked that question. What are the distinctions? Is it a meaningful distinction?
This is my theory, totally my theory, is in the 50s, comic books were demonized. There was some psychiatrist who said everything wrong with society was because of those damn comic books. And so mothers freaked and took comic books away from kids, and politicians said they're going to destroy all comic books. It got to be this really crazy notion that comic books were really everything that was wrong with comic books. So what happened was, of course, kids love comic books. So it's my theory that when mainstream publishers decided to do comic books, they called them graphic novels, so the mothers wouldn't know that they're really comic books. But the main difference, aside from the name, is that comic books come out in a monthly, they come out every month. Graphic novels, the whole story is in one book. And also, graphic novels are perfectly bound, and comic books are put together with staples. And the graphic novels is a long story. Comic books are long stories too. In fact, a lot of graphic novels are made out of comic books after 2 or 3 years. They put them together, and then they're called graphic novels, but they're really comic books. That was my long explanation.
Now, in the past, you've done comic books that were based on other people's characters right, that you didn't create. Like, you did some from the Archie comic book series, you did some Barbie comics, you did Pocahontas.
Right.
What is that like trying to, and I assume you wrote those in addition to doing the drawings. What is that like using other people's characters, and how constraining was that?
I draw own characters. I don't draw Disney or Archie or Barbie. You have to be insane to draw those characters, because the people who own them are so obsessive about the way they look from the right and the way they look from the left, and so it takes a certain skill to be able to do that, which I don't have. I write them, and it takes 7 people to write a comic book. It starts with the writer. And then it goes on to the artist, who does it in blue pencil, then the letterer, and then the inker, and then the colorist. And, of course, the editor keeps everybody in line and keeps it moving. So nobody stays, you're really on a time schedule. You have to get it done at a certain time. And so I love doing that process. But sometimes I open it up and I see that I don't like the way the drawings look, or I don't like the way the coloring looks, and then I just close the comic and never look at it again. Everybody has to be on the same page. Everybody has to really work hard on that one comic and make sure that it is as beautiful as it's deserved to be when the kids read it. So you just have to have a really great group of people writing and drawing and coloring and inking. And that's really the editor's job, to make sure everybody does their job. So you have to have a really good editor. But I love doing Belle. Belle is a great character. Belle is very strong. Belle has a she loves to read. She doesn't take any bunk from the Beast. And so she was a great character. There's a lot of very strong characters. I was saying earlier that it was interesting between Belle and Pocahontas and Little Mermaid. We had them to do for Marvel Comics. I was struck that all the mothers were killed off, and the girls had a great relationship with the fathers. And I was always wondering why did they kill off the mothers? And I wondered if it was because the mother-daughter relationship was so difficult, or was it because all the men who were writing them, it was only men, there were no women writing these characters. So, except some of the mothers were witches, you know, of course.
They could have been ex-wives.
Ex-wives, yes. Witches, and they were horrible characters, stepmothers. You know, and what?
Mother-in-laws.
So that brings me to another one of my questions. A lot of your books and graphic novels and things have been with female main characters, and most of us don't think of comic books as females, girls, and women
right.
being much of a market for comic books or graphic novels. And I'm wondering how much of an issue is that for being able to sell these things to a publisher? Do they see the market and also adults versus adolescents and all those kinds of issues? Most of the things that you're writing are not the mainstream, you know, Superman male adolescent kind of book,
right? And the women with the huge breasts. Yeah, that was always an issue. And when I started, there were only two women writing and drawing comic books. It was me and this and Trina Robbins in California. And it was they started in the early 70s to create a girls' line, which was so exciting because I was there in the beginning to watch Marvel and DC to actually focus on girls. It was 95% boys and just 5% girls. And so it became a wonderful... I did a comic called Angela for DC Comics, which was drugs, sex, and rock and roll. And at that time, actually it was the 80s, at that time the only comic for girls was Archie. And so when I came out with Angel Love, I actually have one of these. In the first issue, Angel meets a guy who is a drug addict. And the second issue, she tries to reform him, and then she breaks up with him. And the third issue, her best friend gets pregnant. And this was such a far cry from Archie that I got all this bad press that I was going to ruin the comic book industry. And after, I think, about the seventh issue, when Angel meets up with her long-lost sister and finds out that her sister was abused by the uncle, I think that's when they started taking me off the stand. And so that was, I loved doing Angel Love, and I really missed her. I got letters from kids all over the country saying, "Angel, you're my only friend," and telling me these horrible stories about their lives. And so I really reached a lot of kids, but at that time it was a little progressive, and right now it's, you know, nobody would blink at it, but at that time it really was a problem. So and then Tom DeFalco from Marvel Comics started doing comics for girls, which was really exciting. We did Beauty and the Beast. We did all the Disney characters. And I did Barbie. And my first character was Ms. Liz, which was cards for the... it was a feminist greeting card. So when I was offered the job of Barbie, my friends were so mad at me. They said, "How could you do Barbie after Ms. Liz and Angel Love?" But we made Barbie a feminist. Barbie, every month, she could do anything. She went to the moon. She was a model, and she was a rocket scientist, and she did anything, and she lived anywhere. So I did 65 Barbie comics and loved it. I thought she was a great role model. She had one, the only flaw with Barbie is that she couldn't make mistakes. But otherwise, she was perfect.
So when you're writing something like this that's your own, do you start with pictures or you start with words in your head?
Pictures and words come at the same time to me. They I had been doing all these characters, licensed characters, and some of my own, but I had it in my mind that I wanted to write my great American graphic novel that was all mine. So I lived in Manhattan for 30 years, and I thought the only way I was going to write this would be to get out of the chaos and the noise and the distraction of the city and move to the country. So I moved on 15 acres and surrounded by creeks, and suddenly it was so quiet. It was so quiet. And I realized that so much of my inspiration was taken from the noise and the chaos of the city. And I would sit and I'd look out the window in Manhattan, and I'd draw and eavesdrop. And here in my studio, I looked out the window and I saw deer and birds, but I don't speak deer and bird. So I started realizing that if I was going to write my great American graphic novel, I'd have to write about myself, because I was really all I had. But my life was such a cliche. You know, I was brought up in a small town, and I was a cheerleader. And I went out with the captain of the football team, and I moved to New York, and I got married, and I got divorced, and it took me so long to write this because there was that critical voice in my head that kept saying, "You're so bored. Who would ever want to hear? Who would ever want to read about what you write?" And so finally, I remember I had this epiphany that I woke up and I thought, cliches are good. Cliches are great because they're universal. And once I was able to embrace that idea, I was able to write this story. And my critical voice, I'm not going to say went away because that's not true, but it stopped. It stopped for a while. Of course, it always comes back, but it did stop, and I was able to write. And as soon as I was able to embrace that idea, I sold the book, and I must have 50 rejections on this book. But then it just changed everything. You know, when you reach a point where you get it and you can actually stop critiquing yourself so much, that's when everything changed for me. And then other press bought it, and it was thrilling. I usually carry my rejection letters with me because they're so wonderful. It's just funny. And I save them all because then at the end, when I finally do publish the book, there's always some that I like to go through and write an email, you know, just like, "Look, I'm going to send you my book, my published book." That'll take you a long way, this vindictiveness.
So how much planning do you do before you start actually... let me back up a step. Do you hand draw all your drawings, or do you use computer drawing tools, or do you scan them and then touch them up? Or
right, I hand draw them, and I've been switching hands because I get really tight. So if anybody wants a tip on how not to be such a perfectionist, if you switch hands and play with, you know, if you're right-handed and switch hands and work with your left hand for a while and then go back, you're looser. So I switch a lot because I tend to be too much of a perfectionist. So I draw quickly, and then I scan it and put it on the computer, and then I draw that line. I'm thrilled. I love the computer. There are some cartoonists that just will never use the computer. They want to start with that blank page. But I've had enough blank pages where I'm happy to have the computer because you can change the pen line, and the coloring is so much easier on a computer. When I used to color, I would spend like 5, 6, 7, 10 hours on one drawing, and then at the end something would happen, and I have to start all over again. So this, you just press a button, and presto, you've got the clean slate again.
Do you use Illustrator? What software do you use?
I use Photoshop.
Okay.
I haven't been doing this. I've been taking a break for a while, so it's not on the tip of my tongue.
So then, what? So do you storyboard everything, or have some outline or general plan before you start doing individual panels, or what's your process?
Yeah, I storyboard the whole thing. I like to see where the story's going, and sometimes just a chapter at a time. But when you storyboard things, when you really know where you're going in your story, then whatever you feel like doing, you know, you want the plot line is the most important thing. What happens if you don't plot out your story? It's so important. I want to see if I can find it here. Yeah, here it is. When I started working for DC Comics, I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know that you had to do a whole plot, but it's all done in color code. So you take the each character gets a color. So Angel Love, when I was doing Angel Love, she was red, and her best friend was yellow, and each character gets a color. And it's so hard to explain. You're going to have to buy the
book. You have to buy the book.
here it is. So you can actually see from the issues. I laid out, I think, 15 issues, and I was taken off the stands, I think, in the 9th issue. But you can see that she's red, and in the top of the each issue is the beginning, middle, end, and twist of the story. So this is the main plot, and all the subplots go underneath. So a subplot can be a main plot in the 3rd issue. Is that making any sense? It's really important to know how to plot. I've been teaching a lot, and I see that my kids come in, and after, if they don't do the plot line, they come in, and they'll say, oh, no, I don't like that story. I want to do something else, because it gets too complicated. But if you know your plot line, you can just go into any story. Anytime you want to write something, you can go in and write that segment, or you can draw that segment, as long as you know your plot line.
And how detailed is your storyboard? Is it more of an outline, or do you actually figure out what people are going to say?
Yeah.
Or?
Well, there's sometimes where you see that scene so clearly that you just write that scene out. A lot of times you don't, but a lot of scenes I have, but most of them is just spending time looking at that board, and you can use sticky notes or colored pencils, and then you move it around. It's never perfect. You just keep moving it around until you see it, and then you can go on with your story. But the plot line is really the most, it's very important to know that. And then the other thing that I keep saying the most important thing is the Bible, which is getting to know your character, the age, the background, the biggest character's biggest fear. What is the goal in your character? So the Bible is everything you need to know about your character and more. And you should know your character as well as or better than yourself. So with Angel Love, I knew her favorite music. I knew her favorite color. I knew how she decorated her apartment. I knew what she dreamed. I actually forgot myself for the longest time when I was doing Angel, because I was so, you have to know that character so well. So when she starts talking, you've got her in your head. So those two things are the most important thing, is plot line and the Bible, which is everything you need to know about your character and more.
So I wanted to ask you just a couple of little detail things about, like, for example, this book. When you've got I noticed that there are different typefaces right. that you've got mixed, which is, I don't read a lot of graphic novels, but that seems unusual. Like in a,
it
usually
is unusual,
in a comic
yeah.
book, it's all the same typeface, and you can tell who's talking by whose bubble you're looking at. But on this page in particular, is a couple of different, there's three different characters, and they have really drastically different typefaces. And I could you talk a little bit about your decision
yeah.
to do that?
What I don't think a lot of people do that, but for me, it's part of the Bible. What does their font look like? And I go through hundreds of fonts to see what it is that they are like the mother in that. I knew what the mother looked like. She was, I forget the typeface, but she had more of a script. And the main character, Joe, I wanted her to have like more of a handwritten script. And a lot of the men in there, they were more masculine. But
there's the mother.
Yeah, here's mom. She's saying, do not accept a date later than Wednesday for Saturday night. You can just see her. She's just so perfect. Never say I love you first. Be unavailable. You know, the mother's giving all these tips. But I think it's important for each character to have their own font, although many people think it really doesn't look well on the page. I don't mind it, though.
Yeah.
Do you do your lettering on the computer also?
Yes. Yes. I do a lot of hand lettering, but for this, it's all on the computer.
Now, one of the other things I noticed about this book, so you don't really have any pages that are strips, I guess, like a comic book. All the pages are either a full page, or there's three, or they're all different configurations, and I wonder if you had a particular design idea
layout,
or design reason for the layout.
And layout to me is so much fun, and talking heads are really boring. So you have to go in and out of the page. Sometimes you want to do a nice landscape. Other times you want to do a big close up, make something pop in your page. So it's all, you've got to move that page so it's not boring.
Yeah, so I guess there's three on a page is the most, is that the most that you have?
I think there's some with six. But for comic books, like this is a comic I did for Marvel called Yuppies from Hell. I did this in the 90s, and this, and when I say eavesdrop, for 3 years, was just walk around the city and listen to conversations, eavesdropping, and I would go to movie theaters, restaurants, the Roxy, just listening to conversations.
Tell the whole title, because I can see it, and it's really funny. It's Sex, Lies, and Mutual Funds of the Yuppies from
right.
Hell.
and this one, we're going off track a little bit.
No, that's fine.
But I was listening to these two guys talking, and the one says to the other guy, I think my relationship with what's-her-name is really getting serious. You can't make that up. He has no idea who this girl is, and he doesn't know her name, and he's afraid that he's getting serious with her. So this story is about, of course he has to be in a relationship with a woman who desperate to get married, right? It's for the conflict. So here they are jogging in Central Park, and he's going, I think my relationship with what's-her-name is getting serious. And his friend says, Julie? He goes, yeah, she's a nice girl and everything, but I'm just not in love. And then Julie's at her shrink saying, I know Joe loves me, doctor. It's his fear of commitment that keeps him from committing. And this story goes on and on. And then there was another one in Central Park where I watched this is New York City, this grown man cry because his three-year-old did not get into the United Nations school. So sad for this poor boy, but so exciting for me. Because I got to write about Hale Preschool, where all the pregnant moms are trying to get their baby, they're in vitro and they're trying to get their baby into Hale Preschool. So the woman in charge of the applicant says, I must be honest with you. And see here, you can see a close-up with her. That's the layouts of close-up, pull-back, close, that kind of thing is very important. I must be honest with you, Hale Prebirth is a highly competitive school. We have over 5,000 applicants with only 2 slots available. let's see here. Junior scored very high on his pre-birth English, but I'm afraid not so good in his pre-birth math. And then these yuppies are yelling, we'll get the private tutor. We'll have it up by the time. Anyway, so the poor kid does get into Hale Prebirth, but only wants to get adopted. So. Anyway, this was all eavesdropping. And then there's an artist who... I used to go down to Soho to galleries and walk around and look at this art and not understand any of it. I mean, it was ridiculous. So I did this artist who created trash. It was all garbage. And, of course, the yuppies come in and have to buy it. So. this was a lot of fun. But you can see why. I mean, New York was great. So leaving it was a big deal, but I didn't realize how what a huge deal it was until I was sitting there looking out my window after the 4th year saying, oh my God, what is happening here? So
I wanted to ask you about my favorite drawing in the book, which is a cockroach. She's in her shrink's office, and she's just been asked, why did she stay with
John
so long? And then her thought bubble is this giant picture of a cockroach.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about your...
Have you ever seen a cockroach?
I have seen cockroaches. I don't live in New York City, but...
They live in New York. do you have cockroaches?
We have some. Oh, yeah.
We have some.
Oh!
Sorry, but...
They're horrible.
You decided to give an entire page to this thought bubble of a cockroach.
I didn't realize how many women were as... terrified, thank you. We're as terrified as cockroaches as I was. I mean, and I every time I saw one, it was like horrifying. In Angel Love, I have talking cockroaches, and they were kind of the commentary of the characters. They would talk about the red one was Angel and the yellow one was Wendy. And I just love writing about cockroaches because they were such a big deal in my life, because I think I did stay with my husband for all those years. I was terrified. I know, isn't that sad? I know, I'm embarrassed to tell you. I've never told this before. But, you know, they really...
Are you saying you stayed with him because he killed cockroaches?
He killed them. He was great at it.
Champion.
Go and pow like that, and with a newspaper, and you know, and they were fast. You know, they'd skirt. They were so fast, but he was great. So, yeah, and then I would talk about that, and then my main character, which was actually me, I would go talk about, you know, what am I going to do with these cockroaches, and she goes, did you ever think of spray? So I got the spray, and I killed it. And then the big thing was, what do you do with the body after you kill it? You know, and then it's like this. Anyway,
so you've said this is semi-autobiographical.
I know, it's too. It really is very autobiographical.
Well, I wondered about that. So that line between memoir and fiction, and you know, there are other graphic memoirs like Fun Home by Alison Bechdel, which is a great book. I love that book.
I just finished that.
Did you really?
Yes. Wonderful.
I love that book. But so, what was your decision process there? Thinking about, well, is this going to be a graphic memoir? Or am I going to call it fiction? But it's going to be heavily autobiographical fiction.
Yeah.
And
I was actually thinking of a new name for graphic novels. What could I call it? But there really wasn't much. I always do words and art, so to me it was like a no-brainer. I wasn't going to sit down and start writing a story. I don't know how to do that. to, you know, to do descriptives that are so elaborate and beautiful when, you know, when you read them by I was going to say a real author, although I'm not going to say I'm not a real author, but, you know, by somebody who just writes prose. It's, you know, to me, that's extraordinary. But I always think, okay, I always see the visual. Maybe it's from movies or television, but I always see the visual. So it was, I wasn't going to do anything except that. There's nothing else I can do.
How does one get do agents handle graphic novels, or
yes, they're becoming
is it a
more
similar
more popular
process to yeah. submitting a fiction? Or?
Same thing. You can, in fact, agents are kind of interested now in graphic novels. They weren't for a while, but. They are kind of interested.
So. Are there some who specialize in that, or do you know?
There are some. I think there's one.
Oh.
And I don't even know her name, but I went through a lot of agents.
How did you land your agent?
Well, I kept going through agents, and quite frankly, my brother-in-law couldn't stand it anymore. And he said to me, I'm going to be your agent.
Aha.
So he had publishing contacts that he was able to get submitted? No, he just went for it.
But
why not?
He couldn't stand it. He was watching me and he'd say, what is she doing for you? What is it? And the thing is that when you get a deal, when you go to get a deal with a publisher, you do it yourself, basically. You do everything yourself. It's a sad... Publishing is very sad today, because when I used to work for Marvel and DC and Archie, they would do everything, and they just wanted me to meet my deadlines, to write and to draw, meet those deadlines, and that was it. About once every 6 months, somebody would take me out to lunch. But I didn't appreciate it as much. But now, when you get published, when you get one, a publisher, they want you to, they say, who do you know? How many friends on Facebook? What can you do to promote this? So you actually have to do your own promotion. So when I get a deal, or somebody gets it, you know, when I get a deal, I would call my agent and say, oh, so this publisher is actually interested in my work. So that was the only time she was available. So when the deal was going on, I'd call and say hi. She was always available. As soon as the deal fell through, she was always away from her desk. I had a really hard time with agents, and I would be crying to my brother-in-law, and he says, I can't stand it anymore. He says, I'm going to sell you this. I'm going to sell this book. And he did. He sold this book. And he...
Do you have his business cards with you? Or
he said he will. He's only my agent. I will not share him with anybody. But he's wonderful. Actually, he does. He does have. He's just a very aggressive person.
Is he the brother to the guy who vigilantly did the did in the cockroaches?
No,
sounds like you have the same genetic makeup.
No.
Now, I have an unrelated question. Now, what do you think about e-books for graphic novels? What do you think about
fabulous, great,
how that works?
The more, the better. You know, now you can actually have the graphics
on the
e-book.
Screen.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love anytime anybody can read my book, I'm happy.
And are yours available as e-books or not yet?
I don't know.
You don't know.
I don't know.
Do you have favorite graphic novel authors or people you would recommend?
I like
Alison Bechdel.
Yes,
or people you would recommend that people look at or study and see.
Everybody's got a different style. You know, my book is different than most because it's a very quick read. You can read it in how long did it take you to read that? In one bathroom, right?
Less than an hour. I mean, 30 minutes.
Yeah, it's very quick, and because I just wanted it to flow. But a lot of the graphic novels take a bit of time and commitment, a lot of them are black and white and wonderful. But you know, this is I just wanted to do something a little bit different, and that's really why I wanted to call it something other than a graphic novel, because it doesn't have the same flavor as those heavy books like Persepolis. Everybody read that?
Oh, yeah, you know? Persepolis is fantastic.
So,
what
is this called?
Graphic novel.
It is called a graphic
novel.
novelette, graphic
memoir. But more and more women are doing graphic novels, and that is so exciting. And you know, getting back to comic books in the 80s, when it was only two women writing and drawing them, it was the Japanese manga influence changed everything. But I don't really like manga. Uh-uh. I can never follow it.
Well, I mean, from back to front? What's wrong?
Yeah, and then the panels are different, and then I don't like the sharpness of the angles. I like it softer. Mm-hmm. So, but you know, kids are being brought up with manga now, so mm-hmm. the Disney characters that were so beautiful and soft are now getting sharper. Mm-hmm. You know, they changed their whole look. So, you know, kids are getting used to angles more.
Let's open it up to questions from the audience. I'm going to let someone else get a turn here. Go ahead.
You talked about having to do a lot of promotion yourself. What have you found, like, what did you do to help promote yourself? And were there certain things you found that were more effective than others?
Well, coming here. So great. You know, you get out of your studio, you get to sit here and talk to everybody. And so I love going to festivals and also I do every once in a while they get me a gig on radio or TV or stuff like that. It's nerve-wracking. did you want to say
it? I was going to ask if you consider your work to be like an illustrated play.
Like a movie script,
So there's some parallels to a play with acts and dialogue and illustrations.
It is. It's like a Broadway musical, I like to think of it. Mm-hmm. It's got a rhythm to it. And especially when I do Archie stories, they change. Every once in a while, they say, 6 pages, just 6 pages, Barbara. I stopped talking to my editor because I would call him and say, oh, I have this idea for sure. Oh, it's been done. But now I just do them and send them, and either they take them or they don't, because everything's been done, especially with Archie. But it really is it's like a little Broadway show, and I put up my pages, and I look at the layouts. I think I have a couple layouts here. I hope I do. I'll show you how quick the layout is. Please, let me... yes. So this is actually a layout for Beauty and the Beast. You see what a mess it is? You can take it around. You can look at it. But and then I put it up on the board, and I see if it moves. Like, if it moves like a musical, if there's something melodic, and it feels like music to me. I don't know. I'm not sure why. But anyway, that's the way a layout looks. It starts with, when I do a Beauty and the Beast with Disney, it's you write out the entire story, the 26 pages, and I just think of each panel, and I write it out, and then I lay it out like that. And then it becomes, then it goes to the writer, to the artist, and then it goes to the inker. Anyway, it goes. But with Disney and Marvel, those were heavily critiqued. Those were lots of editors and lots of comments. I'm sorry I didn't bring you the one that has the seven editors. That was like my favorite thing. Seven editors talking, going, "Good catch." You know, talking to each other on the line like this. And this is a pencil page by the most extraordinary Stan Goldberg. This is an Archie thing. You can look at these. See how beautiful this is? And it's this size. If you just want to pass it around.
You mean that's tabloid size?
Yeah. And then it gets reduced. But that's the process. But even for when I was doing Beauty and the Beast, the father was a inventor, right? So this is what I... You have to show the inventions. Everything you have to show as a... they really want to see everything. But it's not... It wasn't as bad with Betty and Veronica. Because I did about 100 Betty and Veronica stories. So that was... I got that. And I don't know if I talked about Betty and Veronica, that they're... My go-to person for Betty. It's great if you can use yourself as a go-to person because you're available and you're cheap. So for Betty, I felt like I was much more Betty than I was Veronica, even though I always wanted to be Veronica. But I had a friend who was so Veronica, and I would just pop into her head, and I'd be able to write her dialogue. But she also thought she was Betty, which was really funny. She was so Veronica. What did I want to say? Oh, so with Betty and Veronica, they fought over Archie. You know, they've been friends for like 75 years now.
Yeah, right.
And they both love the same guy. You know, that's realistic, right? So I tried to keep Archie out of the story and talk about their friendship because they're so different. It makes great stories. And I also really love to publicly humiliate them in my stories, have them do things that are so upset, because little girls get so, you know, hard on themselves. And so to have, like, this public humiliation and then to see how these girls survive. You know, you survive. You don't have to kill yourself. You know, you can just actually survive. So those are the kinds of stories I like to do with Betty and Veronica.
Could you tell me the size of this paper? Is
it 11 by 17.
11 by 17. And then when it's finally...
Then it gets reduced down to a... This is a comic book.
I see.
Which is one,
See, here's Betty falling. You know, this is her big moment, and she falls. You know, I think it's really important. And I also love to do... pop culture. This is, you know, the party that P. Diddy has in the Hamptons, the white party, and you have to be so special to be invited. You know? Oh, well, Veronica gets on, this is called The List, and she gets invited to this really important party. I call it the P. Pity Purple Party. And everybody has to wear purple, and Betty's like, oh, wow, you got invited, that's great. And then what happens is she finds out that Reggie's invited, which doesn't sound so good, and then Archie's invited. And by the time she finds out Jughead's invited to the party, she's not going. But anyway, so I love to talk about pop culture and who's that ridiculous person? The blonde, who's that? The one with the puppy?
Paris Hilton.
Oh, yeah, I did. I watch a lot of TV. So, you know, watching her with this dog, I had Veronica buy a dog, and of course, when you find out what is entailed in taking care of a dog, she has to get rid of, you know, she has to give it away. So, anyway, those are fun things.
Question.
Okay, so I'm a little confused. All right, you write, and then you do the mock-up. Then you draw them too,
or
you
no? This is done by Stan Goldberg.
But do you do some drawing?
Yes, I do my own, but I don't
realize these are his.
I don't do licensed characters.
Okay.
Anything
so
that
when you did Belle, someone else did Belle.
Oh yes,
you wrote it.
Maybe. In fact, this guy Cosmo Cortez, he was phenomenal, beautiful, beautiful artist. He did.
But even when you're doing text and story, you'll do layouts for yourself.
I do the layouts, and they mostly follow it.
Pass that along as part of your information.
Right, I'm actually pretty good at layouts, so the artist usually follows me. But if they want to change it, they can. If they want to be silly, they can change it. But I do like doing layouts, and I have a really good sense of going in and out of the panel and making something pop.
So Archie, you wrote the comic books.
I write the comics, yes, but there's other people who write comics too. I'm not the only writer.
Okay, because
there's just a couple of women who write comics, It's mostly men. And mostly men draw them.
In terms of your graphic novel, are there, how many other color graphic novels are you aware of?
You know, that's funny that you said not as many as, not that many. And so that's why when I look at graphic novels, I love them, but I love color. I think color is so important.
Does it make a big difference in terms of the publisher or the price of printing?
No, it really doesn't. It doesn't make that big a difference. Although I must have gotten 7 or 8 rejections because of color.
Because it was color.
Really? But I got so many rejections on this book. For so many different reasons, and I couldn't really know. There was nobody was saying the same thing.
Right.
So one day I got I love the writing, but I don't like the drawing. If you can get someone else to draw it, and then the same thing, I love the drawing, but that writing, I do not like that voice. And that was in one day.
Yeah.
One day, it was like almost like this. Like, I got both of those emails at the same time.
Made it easier to ignore, didn't it?
Yeah. It did. And I'm so good at rejection.
You'll be next, Steve. Steve had a question back there.
I'm so good at it.
Yeah. So just sort of a follow-on to that, you're obviously a really accomplished artist as well as a writer. And maybe a lot of us in this room, I don't know, aren't quite as accomplished artists in particular. And I was wondering if you know offhand whether some people just do sort of sketches that are, you know, not intended to really convey the character very well, except perhaps in the action, and that it's mostly the words. And if you do you know, are there people who submit something like that where it's a storyboard?
Did you see that storyboard that I submit? It's, you would laugh because the drawings are ridiculously. I show that to all my students, and I say, this is the drawings that I do, and they laugh because they're stick figures.
Mm-hmm. So is it like children's books where they will match you with an illustrator?
Yeah,
or
if you have a story and you just do it, and I write notes, this is a beautiful sunny day, and then I just go like this and put a mountain in the background.
So I know, Steve, I don't know if you're familiar with, in children's books, most people don't submit art with their picture books. They have a text of a picture book. The publisher will find an illustrator. They don't even really want you to find an illustrator. They want to pick their own. And so I guess I'm wondering if that works that way, maybe in the graphic novel area too.
Yeah. I love stick figures. I think stick figures. Sometimes stick figures have the most personality. And the Diary of Wimpy Kid is all stick figures. That's the most popular graphic novel.
That's true.
I really encourage stick figures. And they're fun.
You'll be next.
One thing I've seen quite a bit of the past couple of years are people taking classical literature, classical novels, and turning them into graphic novels. Is that like a new niche? Or?
Yeah, I think so.
I feel like Classics Illustrated from many years ago was exactly that. Classic comics.
Yeah.
And that's just because people are just...
I think it's because kids want to read comics, and that's how they can get them to read Treasure Island without glossing over their eyes and falling asleep. And that's—I mean, my kids read Treasure Island, Robinson Crusoe as graphic novels before they read the actual book.
Right.
And so it was really, really handy to have.
Yeah, my kids are sent. My kid, oh my God, she's reading Othello now. I'm so sorry for her. But it's so, you know, she's got it antidoted, and I am amazed at what they're teaching. And so I go out and get her the graphic novel of and the movie. Because, you know, I couldn't read it.
Someone back there.
How was the process of like getting your foot in the door at like Archie and Marvel and DC? Would you like send in writing sample after writing sample?
Go to comic book conventions.
Yeah, and just...
And stand in line and show your work. And that's a good way. I watched and make sure that the writing is readable. I've watched these kids who have beautiful drawings and you can't read a thing that they're writing. And I watched the president of Marvel Comics. I just felt so sorry for this kid. He just said, "Oh, I can't read it next." And the balloons are very important. Make sure that everything is done well. If you're going to do a thought balloon, make it a thought balloon. You know, all those things that people just think, "Oh, I can draw so well. I'm such a good artist." But those details are so important. And I also watched a kid come up, and he said, "I'm going to hire you." Boom, he was hired. So you can actually get great feedback at comic book conventions. It's sometimes the lines are long, but you can meet Stan Lee's there. You know, just go to the comic conventions. And then local libraries. I always encourage the kids to go to local libraries because they get guest speakers. You know, I go to libraries a lot. And just push them onward. And there's a lot of parents who come up to me and say, you know, "What's my kid going to do in the real world?" Because they're so passionate. I go, "They can do this. They can actually do this." But and also put your comic online. That's the most extraordinary thing, that they have all these websites that my kids go to. What are they called? I don't
YouTube.
Even. What are,
YouTube?
No, it's not YouTube. It's I forget the name of it. But they meet artists, meet writers, and a lot of kids that do graphic novels have learning disabilities. You know, a lot of autistic, a lot of Asperger's. Give me an Asperger's kid. Oh my God! You point them in a direction and they're great. So, you know, that catches into something in their brains, and just, I've had several who are just phenomenal.
Do we have a couple more questions, and then I want to make sure we leave time for book signing. Go ahead.
I wondered if you could comment on the book, The Invention of Hugo Cabré, which was sort of a crossover book, having won the Caldecott Medal.
I'm going to feel really stupid.
Was that the movie Hugo based on?
It was made into a movie, but it got nominated for the National Book Award in 2007, and it was also the Caldecott Award winner. And I found the black and white graphite drawings combined with the text that he had written himself in a big, thick book that my daughter gave me for Christmas. Does anybody else know?
I've read the book, yeah.
What did you think? So you thought it was extraordinary?
It blew me away.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. It was one of the most beautiful books I've ever seen.
Oh, good.
And it was a New York Times bestseller. For goodness sake. I was amazed.
Ooh. So there's a market
They're becoming extremely, extremely popular.
Who do you see as the future of this? Are they going to start looking for more writers?
I think that even in schools now, teachers get that comic books are important. I just did a whole series of weekly meetings with kids in elementary school. Third, fourth, and fifth grades. I came once a week, and I brought in comics. And the kids now are starting to read because of comics. It touches a kid that just doesn't have any interest in reading. If you give them a comic book with all the color, they can start looking at the images, and if they don't know how to read, they can still read a comic. That's what I was going to say. That's what I was saying about the musical thing, that you should be able to look at a comic like an Archie comic or Beauty and the Beast, and look at the comic and not read one single word and still get the story. And that's why it's so important for kids to read comics, or a certain kind of kid. I'm not talking about the kid who loves to read and who doesn't like comics. I'm talking about the kid who doesn't read. They can actually read the whole thing. And somebody who comes over from a different country, that's how a lot of them learn how to read, through comics. It's such an important field, and it's getting stronger. But I just hope that it keeps growing, and not that the mangas, because you can't tell a story with the mangas. I I just don't think there's a real story there.
We had one question here, and then you, and then we'll wrap it up. So go ahead.
Well, this is less applicable for us to use, but more, I'm just curious, how did you balance work, making a living, with writing and this creativity before they became hopefully one and the same? That might be a very big question.
I mean, did you have a day job? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah,
did
you have a day job? No. Find
there's
a technique
nothing I can do except this. Literally, there's nothing else I can do. I did not have, when I moved to New York, I was 20. And I got on a Greyhound bus and got off and had my portfolio, and I got a couple of jobs in different places. But my final job was in the Garment Center. Everybody knows the Garment Center. And I was in this office. It was the most chauvinistic office in the world. There were 40 women running around, getting coffee, taking care of these seven bosses, these seven guys. And I remember, I did promotional pieces for them. I remember looking up from my drawing board, and I saw all these guys in leisure suits. Does everybody remember leisure suits from the 70s? Mm-hmm. One was pink, baby blue, lime, and they were all yelling at me, and that was kind of like my moment of, I can't do this. So when I was 27, I started a greeting card line called Ms. Liz for the liberated woman. And that's really how I started. I started doing greeting cards, and I had this idea that greeting cards were easy. They were not easy, but I took 24 of them into Bloomingdale's, just kind of on a portfolio, and the Bloomingdale's buyer bought two dozen each for nine stores. And I went, oh my God. And I'm in the business. I'm in the greeting card business. So at that time, banks were interested in giving money to women who were starting a business. So I took my Bloomingdale's order in. I said, look, I got an order. And they gave me money, and that's how I printed it. So I have, since then, I haven't had a day job, although I would recommend a day job.
Because if you'd like to eat, that would
yeah,
be.
Yeah, sometimes I went
your
for,
question is
especially
next.
After Angel Love, I didn't work for a year. I thought that I really was never going to work again. So I would definitely recommend a day job.
Your question, and then we'll wrap up. Go ahead.
Did you go to school for art already, or are you?
I went to the Art Institute of Pittsburgh, and it was only 2 years, and then I.
What was like your specialty though? What did you?
No, it was no, just a general, it was just like, art. It was just a way of getting out of the house. But I think so much of it is learning, is on the job, and I just always loved writing and drawing. So just doing it. I think I studied fashion design. Mm-hmm. And that was because it was easy.
Thank you, everyone, for coming. And thank you to Barbara.